is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
And welcome to it, my friends. It's the Steve Gruber Show on a Wednesday. Coming up today, we'll have Trevor Thrall on the program from the Cato Institute's Defense and Foreign Policy Department. He says Trump is the ignorant candidate that ignorant Americans deserve. Maybe he's enthralled with our current foreign policy and how things are working. We'll ask him, Trevor, about that. Also, Senator Rick Jones will be here talking about oil pipelines under the Straits of Mackinac. And later, Megan Barth, don't miss it. It's all still ahead this Wednesday on the Steve Gruber Show. Here's a broadcasting note. It's a permanent one, if you will. Longtime Detroit Tigers broadcaster Paul Carey, dead at the age of 88. Carey has been in failing health for the last few years. A native of Mount Pleasant, who attended both Central Michigan and Michigan State Universities, Carey spent 19 years broadcasting Tiger games with Ernie Harwell, joining him in the booth in 1973. He retired in 1991. In addition to his time with the Tigers, Carey also worked at WJR from 1956 until 1992, and served as a play-by-play announcer for the Detroit Pistons. His career began after he served in the Army during the Korean War. Carey is a member of the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame, survived by his wife of 30 years, Nancy, and his nieces and nephews. Paul Carey. For all of us who were Tigers fans, you know, in the 70s and 80s, during those really big years, bless you boys and all that happiness. Of course, you remember him. It is Wednesday on the Steve Gruber Show. If you'd like to get a hold of us here, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. Not in response to her racist skit, but apparently in her effort to attract as many black voters as possible, Hillary Clinton will be hosting an honor of a Republican state lawmaker at its Fight for Freedom Fund dinner next month. The massive fundraising dinner serves some 10,000 guests each year at Cobo Hall, and it's being announced by the NAACP, and the former Secretary of State will keynote the 61st annual event. Clinton spent time in Detroit last month in her Democratic presidential campaign, of course, ahead of the Michigan's primary election that she lost to Bernie Sanders. Detroit NAACP President Reverend Wendell Anthony said, "Our speaker is no stranger to the city. Our speaker has, in fact, had a record of involvement with the work of the NAACP. The last time Secretary Clinton was with us was during her tenure as senator for the state of New York. We had also invited Secretary Clinton 2 years ago to speak at our dinner as she was concluding her official tenure as Secretary of State. We're pleased that she's now able to join us in the city of Detroit." Joe Biden was the guest last year, and Nancy Pelosi the year before that. So that is scheduled for May the 1st at Cobo Center. To me, this signals that Michigan is in play more than they would like to admit. Michigan is more in play, you know, the dedication to Michigan in an election year. That dedication to Michigan in an election year gives me the indication that they think it's up for grabs potentially. That they, the Democrats, think it's up for grabs potentially. Here's some new polling numbers that are out now. Now, Hillary Clinton, this is for the week concluding April the 10th. Hillary Clinton still leads the field of Democratic candidates, of which there are two, but not by as much as you would think. Her margin has narrowed again to just 6 points. It was 9 points when it was most recently done, but her lead now is 49% to 43% for the Democratic Socialist from Vermont, Bernie Sanders, a guy who's not even a Democrat. In the Republican side, Donald Trump continues to lead well into the double digits. 16 points ahead of Ted. He's at 46%, 16 points ahead of Ted Cruz, who is at 30% support. John Kasich, the guy that just doesn't know when to go home, at 16% total. He's down from last week. Cruz is up too. Kasich's down. Trump is cruising at 46%. This is with adults over 18 who say they are registered to vote. Not likely voters, but registered voters. And so, with a possible contested convention on the horizon for the Republicans, both Cruz and Trump have argued that they would be best suited to beat Hillary Clinton if she is the nominee, of course. It's interesting, then, to look at whether Trump or Cruz would be more competitive in a general election matchup against the current Democratic frontrunner. When given a choice between Clinton and Cruz, a third-party candidate, or not voting at all, registered voters are fairly split between Clinton and Cruz. 37% would vote for Clinton, 32% would vote for Cruz. 19 say they would go for a third-party candidate. Now they should do the poll this way. Clinton, Cruz, and Donald Trump, who would win? Well, I mean, we might get to that point. When asked about Trump as the GOP nominee in November instead of Cruz, registered voters are split between Clinton and Trump as well, but much closer. And much closer, they'd like you to think. 38% would vote for Clinton. 36% would vote for Trump. That is a statistical dead heat. 16% would vote for a third-party candidate. 8% would just stay home and drink heavily. Is that you, sir? You going to stay home and drink heavily? You, sir. Yeah, you. Well, you kind of look that way. When looking at this question by candidate support, only about half of Cruz supporters and half of Trump supporters said they would vote for the other GOP candidate in a general election, should the candidate be Hillary Clinton. In a theoretical November contest where Clinton and Trump were the candidates, 56% of Cruz supporters would vote for Trump and a quarter would vote for a third-party candidate. So they say. We'll see. We'll see how that turns out. But it's interesting to note. This is an NBC News, by the way, NBC News weekly election tracking poll. The sample is 12,600 adults aged 18 and over. This is a big sample. So it's pretty, you know, it's pretty telling that Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, according to this NBC poll, 12,500 people. So this notion that if Trump becomes the nominee, Hillary Clinton automatically wins and they win, the Democrats win the Senate and they win the House and they win governorships and basically all Republicans are run out of town. That's just nonsense. Being told to you by Republicans and Democrats who don't want to lose their connection to the cash train, in my opinion. Now, when we come back, Trevor Thrall is going to join us from the Cato Institute, basically telling us that Donald Trump is the idiot candidate for idiot voters. No, sir, I'm not talking to you this time. It was about the liquor, not this. Please pay attention to the road. Thank you. Back in a minute on the Steve Gruber Show.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world. Common Sense Radio. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
It's Wednesday here on the Steve Gruber Show. If you'd like to get a hold of us here, of course, the Common Sense Online, 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. My next guest here, Trevor Thrall, is a senior fellow for the Cato Institute's Defense and Foreign Policy Department. Thrall is an associate professor at George Mason University's School of Policy. And Trevor, welcome to the program.
Steve, thanks for having me.
So, I mean, don't pull any punches. Trump is the ignorant candidate ignorant Americans deserve. I should get a lot of lovely email over this. Go ahead.
You know, I will admit I didn't write the title of the piece, but it is true that as much as he may know about business, he is not an expert on foreign policy.
Fair enough. Look at the person we have in the White House currently. who has proven to be an abject rookie, who has put us in a disadvantage from the southern border to the Syrian border, to the border between the United States and Russia when it comes to the idea of the Cold War returning. I honestly, Trevor, could we do worse?
I don't know. He was a huge rookie, as you point out. I mean, one of the things that, you know, Trump, his success reminds you how important foreign policy experience and that kind of thinking is to for the commander in chief. And Obama had no foreign policy experience when he won the presidency. And, you know, it's kind of terrifying. Frankly.
Well, actually, he may have done what he is doing by design, lead from behind, lessen America's role in the world, which he has done successfully. So his policies may have worked. Okay, so where do you find fault directly with the things that Donald Trump has said?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting because as I, you know, have written, one of the only consistent things about Trump is his inconsistency. He's not clearly a classical Democrat when it comes to foreign policy. He's not, you know, clearly a classical Republican. He's got a weird mix of kind of a grab bag of policies, some of which, you know, kind of like a broken clock being right twice a day, some of which seem to be pretty good, possibly, some of which seem to be a little bit crazy. You know, the fact that he wants to, you know, make the NATO allies, you know, pay more for NATO, well, that's pretty reasonable. We've been, you know, trying to get that to happen for the whole time NATO's existed.
So why hasn't it happened? Hold on, let me stop you there. If it's the right thing, why hasn't it happened?
That is a really excellent. I think it's basically the U.S. has been so paranoid about, you know, NATO being strong enough that it never was patient enough to make the allies pick up their end of the bargain.
I think we have feckless weasels that go to Washington. Okay.
That could also be part of it.
Fair
enough. Good theory.
Next part.
Next part. But, you know, on the other hand, I think everything he has said about how to deal with ISIS in the Middle East has been kind of odd. You know, I mean, killing terrorists' families, I mean, it might feel good emotionally. It's illegal and probably would not help. You know, random suggestions that he would send 30,000 troops.
You know, I took that suggestion. Hold on. You know, I actually took that suggestion differently.
Yeah?
And I don't think that he was, like, going to go kick in the doors and shoot women and children. I don't think that was the point of the comment. The point, the way I took the comment, and it sat okay with me, of course, here comes the hate mail again, is the fact that if a terrorist lives in this village here, and this village is aware of the terrorist activities that are propagating from that village, and we go and, you know, we just parked B-52s in the Middle East. If we send B-52s over and they carpet bomb that village, well, that's the price you pay for harboring a guy who's a terrorist. And what happens is their families and their friends get killed too, along with their dog, which, by the way, no surprise, they'd like to kill you and me and your dog too, Trevor. That's a fact. So I took the point to be something different. I didn't think he was going to kick in the door to kill children. That's not at all how I took it or what I think he meant. I'm not defending Donald Trump's the way he says it, but I think it's a little bit different than it's being portrayed. Next point.
And you may be exactly right. And, you know, candidates have to say so much on the campaign trail that, you know, when they say things even slightly offhanded, it gets blown up into a big, you know.
Well, Republicans do. I mean, Democrats don't have that problem. They can make racist jokes with the mayor of New York City and they get a pass on it. Anyhow.
Evidently.
That happened, you know, over the weekend. But, okay, next with the foreign policy. So NATO, may be a good idea to have them pay. ISIS, maybe not a good plan. What else?
Well, you know, he certainly opposes the Iran nuclear deal, and that's a reasonable position to take. You know, that's a healthy debate that, you know, Americans should have about what is the right way to go with Iran's nuclear program. And I don't have any problem with him opposing it. But it would be nice to know that he actually knew what the deal was, and it's sort of clear when he gave this.
Do any of us know? Do any of us know what the deal is exactly?
You know what? I hope most Americans don't know all the details because it's, you know, as these things are, kind of complicated. But you know, maybe the big brush strokes would be good.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, whose money is going where, and why Iran can't buy things from the United States. Things like that are probably, you know, good chunks of the program.
The takeaway that I know is that Iran's getting, $150 billion? They can sell their products anywhere. They can now buy missiles and so forth from Russia. We told them they couldn't, but they're doing it anyway. And they're firing missiles off, which we told them they couldn't, but they're doing anyway. And nobody's being held accountable. So maybe the whole Iranian deal is garbage. What about the idea of the Monroe Doctrine as put forward in some ways by Trump? You know, basically, we're not going to get involved with everybody's business anymore, which is a kind of an offshoot of the Monroe Doctrine in my way of thinking. Good idea or bad idea?
I think it's a good idea. This is one of the areas where I think Trump's general common sense about what's been going on the last 10, 15 years is not only right, but I think it's in line with most of what Americans think, which is, you know, we've spent a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of American lives trying to play whack-a-mole around the world, trying to control things that maybe aren't really under our control, and maybe it's time to just focus on, you know, getting healthy and not doing quite so much of that. Frankly, I think Trump might be onto something there. And it's interesting because that's one of the things that neither Republicans nor Democrats can admit, typically.
That we're wasting our time over there. All right, Trevor.
That's not even possible.
I've got news for you, Trevor. Trevor Thrall, by the way, senior fellow at the Cato Institute's Defense and Foreign Policy Department. Trevor, he's right on the Iran deal. He's probably got a good idea with NATO, and he's probably got a good idea with Monroe Doctrine. He's wrong on ISIS. You just gave him a score of 3 out of 4. I'm just letting you know. But I got to run. But I'll have you back to talk more about it. Good conversation.
Steve, thanks.
Trevor Thrall from the Cato Institute, right here. It's a Wednesday on the Steve Gruber Show.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
It's kind of a good news, bad news thing. The good news, you have until the 18th of April to make your tax payment this year. The bad news is you've got to make your tax payment this year. So that's the way that is. I mean, you get 3 extra days, and so what? I'll be making my payment. Some of you luckier folks will be getting a payment back. You know, it's weird. For whatever reason, even when, you know, I was just starting out, I've only ever gotten like 3 tax returns in my life, you know, refunds ever, which is a little rough. You know, I won't kid you. It's a little rough to get 3 ever. So I'm used to it. The worst part is it takes longer and longer and longer, it seems, to reach Tax Freedom Day, which is the day in the year where you've worked enough to pay your taxes for the year, after which apparently we get to keep it for ourselves. But they'll find creative ways to get the rest of it, too, I'm sure. Curtis Dubé here, recognized as a leading expert on taxation issues, is a research fellow in tax and economic policy at the Heritage Foundation. Curtis, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You ever gotten a refund?
I got one this year, actually,
That's enough of that. I've had enough of you right now. I'm just a little upset. What do you mean you got a refund? Nobody ever gets a refund. I'm sore. I'm emotionally messed up over this, apparently, but
remember, I'd rather not get a refund than get one, because it means if you get a refund, it means you're overpaying the government for most of the year. And that's not that's basically an interest-free loan you're giving them.
Well, that's
true. So I'd rather shortchange them for the year and owe them a little bit than have them send me something back without any interest on it.
Yeah, but I could take like $50. You know, if they sent me $50 back, it would be a lot better than what's about to happen to me, which is a punishing, painful experience over the next couple of days. Anyhow, is it just me, Curtis, or are we actually working longer to finally get to that tax freedom day? It just seems to me like we work longer and longer and longer. And I don't know. I look at tax increases all over the place. You know, in Michigan, it's an increase in the gas tax this year. The federal government's talking about an increase in the gas tax. It seems like there's new and creative ways to tax us all the time.
Well, certainly taxes have been going up at the federal level during the Obama years. There's no doubt about that. But what usually dictates tax freedom day, the day when we've earned enough as a nation to pay our total tax bill, is the economy. And the economy's been growing, albeit slowly, for several years now, actually since 2009. And that's what the main driver of pushing tax freedom day back later in the year right now. And it'll continue to go back later in the year as the economy continues to grow. If it stalls, the tax freedom day will fall back. Or if Washington goes on another bout of tax raising, that will also push it further back in the year.
If I'm not mistaken, we just completed the first part of fiscal year 2016 with an all new record of money coming through the door for the federal government, and yet we're still $640 billion over budget. It's inconceivable to me, which means we'll be over $1 trillion overspent this year, even though the federal government will bring in something on the order of $3.4 trillion. State and local governments will bring in another $1.6 trillion, which means $5 trillion Americans will pay in taxes this year. And yet these governments of ours continue to spend more than $5 trillion, and we continue to go broke. Does this make any sense whatsoever?
Actually, it makes perfect sense. It makes sense because government at the federal, state, and local level, they have a spending problem, not a revenue problem. We have big deficits at the federal level, and the states have a hard time balancing their budgets because they spend too much, not because they bring in too little revenue. And that's the important thing to remember when you hear a politician like Barack Obama or Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton say that we need to raise taxes out of fairness and to pay for things like free college education. We already have these massive deficits because they keep spending, not because they're raising too little revenue. You're right. It's always a – when you have a growing economy like we've had and for a while, you're always going to have record levels of revenue. That's just how it works. It's just that Congress and Washington keep spending so much, the revenue growth can't keep up. But it's all on the spending side that drives the deficit problem.
So how do we ever – you know, all right, I mean, we can sit here and – and tax freedom day is great, but, you know, most of us are paying more taxes than I'd like. I look at if Hillary Clinton is elected, taxes will go up again. If Bernie Sanders is elected, my God, you might as well just set your wallet on fire based on, you know, the proposals he has. At some point, can we possibly pay for the things we bought in the 1970s and 1980s and at least retire some debt? Because one click on the interest rate or two could really bring this country to its knees, correct?
Yeah, when someday interest rates will rise, and I'm not going to be the one to predict when that happens, but yeah, they're going to rise, and the cost of servicing the debt we have will certainly rise sharply. It's one of the major reasons why we need to get the deficit under control, because right now deficits are not all that big historically. They've come down since the end of the recession and the great spending binge that Washington went on in the early days of the Obama administration. However, they're going to go right back up again because of the continued retirement of the baby boomers. Social Security and Medicare spending is going to continue going up. And that's going to drive deficits over $1 trillion a year again in the near future. That's when we're really getting into trouble. So you're adding over $1 trillion a year to the deficit. Interest rates are going up. And we have a major problem. Basically, interest will be crowding out all the other areas of the budget. But there seems to be a little appetite in Washington and on the campaign trail for getting spending under control.
No, why would you? Curtis, come on. Curtis, if you can buy people's votes using other people's money, why would you want to curtail that? You know, you just take money from this guy and buy the votes over here. It's been going on since the 1930s. Make no mistake. It's what it is. What a lot of these programs are, hey, you can't vote for the other guy because he'll take away this freebie that we're giving you over here, or this gift over here, or this cash that we're giving you. We live in a country where you have people that go to work and pay whatever they pay and get $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 more in a refund than they ever paid into the system. It's what we'd like to call unsustainable. It's impossible to keep up with it. It's not possible. If you have a single parent that has a couple of kids making $50,000 and they get a check back from the government, $7,000 in excess of what they ever paid in. I don't care what you call that. That's welfare, and we can't afford to continue doing business that way. Am I wrong?
I think that the main driver, the main thing that's driving a budget crisis in the near future and in a debt and could lead to a debt crisis is Social Security, Medicare, the entitlement programs, the old age retirement entitlement programs, and it's driven by the fact that there's more baby boomers than there are the rest of us, and they're going to be retiring in huge droves, and Medicare and medical costs will continue to rise. Those are what will lead us to a disaster. If we reform those programs, we can probably skate through. But unless we do that, we're going to have a major problem.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I guess we'll just keep working. We've got a few more days to go, Curtis, before we reach Tax Freedom Day for this year. The only way to pull it off, though, is to try to figure out if we could find some politician anywhere that would actually reduce spending sometime along the way. Curtis, I greatly appreciate it.
Anytime.
Curtis Dubay from the Heritage Foundation here on the program. It's 41 after the hour. Keep this in mind. When building a new home, your options should be wide open. With Greenstone, you can choose to pick up the hammer or let someone else do the heavy lifting. Our construction loans are designed to fit your needs, from do-it-yourself projects and fully contracted the home sites on acreage of any size. Greenstone offers competitive rates with low down payments, and with 31 Michigan locations, they're just a short drive away. To learn more, visit greenstonefcs.com. GreenstoneFCS.com. That's Greenstone Farm Credit Services, your custom home lender. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world. Common Sense Radio. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
All righty. It is Wednesday. What a busy week already, right? Quickly to the hotline, Kathy in Portage today. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Steve. I just had a comment about what you just had on just now. I tend to agree with you as far as the tax returns. I have nieces and nephews that have children. They put in tax, and they're getting like $7,000-$8,000 back. Their tax, they never put in tax.
That's right. They get huge the earned income tax credit. Yeah, this earned income tax credit, or whatever you want to call it. They get these massive amounts of money back, far more than they ever paid in. How is that sustainable? And the answer is it's not.
No, I totally agree with you because that, I mean, it's spent before it even they get it, and then they're crying, well, we don't have any money.
Well, yeah,
you're getting all this money, you know, and it's like just
how many? Now hold on, real quickly. Do they have new cars?
No.
Do they have newer cars or televisions or what? I mean, they're spending their money somewhere.
Oh, televisions and you know the.
Cell phones?
Yeah.
Computers? Toys for the kids?
CDs, DVDs, whatever.
Yeah, game boxes. Yeah, exactly.
It's just toys.
Yeah, you got it, Kathy. You nailed it. I got to run. It's the entertainment society. You know, we think that we complain about being broke with brand new cell phones in our hands that cost us, what, $150 a month? An internet service at home that costs $100 a month? And satellite TV or cable, whichever, that costs $100 a month. Why don't you go ahead and add up your entertainment bill for the month and see where you are. And think if you cut that in half, how much more money you would have. Could you live with a flip phone? Could you live with basic cable? Could you live with one TV in your house? Could you live with a car that's maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years old? If you cut your entertainment bill in half, where would you be? Just something to consider. Wednesday on the Steve Gruber Show, State Senator Rick Jones joining me now. He has put forth bills to target the oil pipelines under the Straits of Mackinac. Senator, welcome back to the program.
Good morning.
What is your concern with these? We've talked about this in the past, but you obviously have a growing concern with these pipelines that are under the Straits of Mackinac that run crude oil under the water. What is your concern?
Well, I have a huge concern. We had an Enbridge pipeline that leaked into the Kalamazoo River. It was the biggest disasters we've ever had. And that affected all sorts of homeowners in the river for a very long time. In fact, my mother-in-law had to sell her house because of the odor. And the pipeline under the straits is the same age, almost exactly the same age as the one that broke down in the Battle Creek Marshall area. So it's a huge concern because if it breaks under the Great Lakes, it's going to do huge damage to Lake Huron. They say back on the island will be just flooded with oil. You know, it's going to damage tourism and fishing. In fact, they think it would take 100 years for the lake to completely recover. So it's just not worth the risk, especially when you find out they're using the Great Lakes, the straits there, as a shortcut to get to Sarnia. That's where the oil is going.
So it's not even oil that's staying in the United States.
Correct. About 5% of the product is bled off up by Escanaba, and they get some oil and propane product up there, and they do some things to it, and then they put it on trucks and truck it around the UP. Well, they can continue to do that. They just don't need to cross the Great Lakes and go over to Sarnia. They can use other lines up in Ontario. Makes no sense at all.
So why are we? I mean, obviously somebody's getting paid somewhere. I mean, there's a transaction somewhere. Where that oil passing over Michigan and under the Straits of Mackinac and so forth, that is somebody's picking up a bill somewhere. Who's getting paid?
Well, certainly there are some tax dollars being collected on the pipeline, and I'm sure that the areas that are collecting that are very happy. But why take the risk? 40 million people are drinking Great Lakes water right now. It's only going to go up when we connect Genesee County and Flint to Lake Huron, and people can't drink Canadian oil.
Well, you only say that because it's true. Yeah. But I wonder, you know, I mean, you wonder, I mean, is there something wrong with these pipes? Do you know something? Is there some impending doom? Is there some, you know, problem? Is there, is it detrimental? Do we know?
Well, we don't know. In fact, Attorney General Bill Schuette has come out and said that he wants to see a better examination of the pipelines carrying oil. And the company has not been forthcoming with it so far. So I'm calling for an independent inspection by a third party, not the company itself, to ensure us that it's safe. I'm calling for no more pipelines under the Great Lakes. And let's hope that Enbridge will be a responsible corporate citizen and make plans in the future to reroute the oil through Ontario to get to Sarnia and not cross the Great Lakes.
And probably not a bad idea. Hey, while I've got you on the phone, it's something to consider anyway before we have a spill, because the Great Lakes being a closed hydraulic system as opposed to the ocean, the cleaning time and the time for the lakes to heal themselves is longer than it would be, say, in the Gulf of Mexico, just for an example. All right, so we're clear on that. What about this put a ring on it, to Bill? Where is that right now? I got Jim sending me a note here asking to ask you, put a ring on it, Bill. Where is it?
I'm still waiting for the leader of the Senate, Arlen Meekhoff, to take that up. And I bug him every 2 weeks and ask him to take it up.
And nothing yet.
You'd have to talk to the
when you see these things happen, like what's happening in North Carolina, you put a religious bill or a bill that even smells like religion at all anywhere into play. Next thing you know, you're being threatened by, you know, no Super Bowl, no World Series, nobody's going to come to your state. You know, governors are telling their citizens where they can travel and cannot travel because of things. And I'm not saying your bill does that, but it would get misconstrued and attacked as, you know, homophobic or this or that or whatever. You get what I'm saying.
Well, you know, we're also paying for heterosexual couples living together. They get the same benefits just as if they were married. Makes no sense at all. It absolutely is not aimed at people that are gay.
I understand that. I'm just telling you what the backlash would be. You know, a prognosticator, political hoo-ha. That's what I'm doing. Anyhow, Senator, always a pleasure.
Have a great day.
They have Senator Rick Jones right here on the program. Back in a moment on the Steve Gruber Show.